welcome everyone. My name is Ricky Bradley. I'm the IT director for Citizens Climate Lobby. It's my honor to welcome the over 265, 67, 68, 69 volunteers from throughout the country who've joined us tonight. In just a few moments, we're going to tell you all about the August recess update and all the carbon pricing bills that have just been introduced, and a little bit more about HR 763, our own bill. But before we get started, I have a few housekeeping items to review regarding this meeting and exactly how you can attend. All right, so real quick, I'll just introduce Madeline Parra. She is CCL's Vice President of Programs, and Danny Richter will be on the call as well tonight. He is CCL's Vice President of Government Affairs, and I'm gonna turn it over to Danny at this point. Give me 1 second, Danny, get you unmuted.
Thanks, Ricky, and thank you everybody for making time here on a Tuesday night to be with us. So in this legislative update, I'm gonna cover a couple of things. Number one, I want to cover how our bill, the Energy Innovation Act, is doing. I want to cover last Thursday's slew of carbon pricing bills, which is very exciting. And I want to cover what to keep in mind as we begin the August recess here. And then there'll be some time for questions. So first of all, how is the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act doing, HR 763? Well, right now, the number of co-sponsors is 59. We have 58 Democrats, one Republican. This includes 4 co-sponsors on the Ways and Means Committee, 11 co-sponsors on Foreign Affairs, and 5 co-sponsors on the Energy and Commerce Committee. Those are the 3 committees of jurisdiction. The bill was referred to those 3 committees, so that's why I highlight how many co-sponsors we have. We're also really excited that our list of co-sponsors includes the chair for the Asian American and Pacific Islanders Caucus in Congress. It also includes the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. We're very excited to have their support. Also interesting about this is that the co-sponsor list includes 29 sponsors of the Green New Deal resolution. And just as importantly, that means that it also includes 30 who have not co-sponsored that resolution. So what we're doing is we're getting a wide swath of the, a very representative swath of the American population in this. So that's good. In June, when I gave my talk at the conference, which is available online, you can look at that if you happen not to be there in June, I talked about how I don't think that our bill, HR 763, will advance in the House until it gets, quote, serious consideration in the Senate. Now, serious consideration is going to mean different things to different people, but some things that might mean serious consideration would be, of course, going up for a vote would count as serious consideration. If it is seen as moving through committee, and the Senate version was referred to the Finance Committee in the Senate, that would constitute serious consideration. Or for some people, if it just gets a certain number of Republican co-sponsors, that would be considered serious consideration. But I don't see it moving through the House until that happens. And also in that talk, again, which you can find online, I talked about how we're earning the inside track right now. And what I meant with that is the runner on the inside track is, that's where the smart money is. That runner has earned that position by getting a series of faster times beforehand. And if you don't know anything about the runners in that race, you want to pick the person who is on the inside track because they are the good, safe bet. And so we want to be the good default position. And the way we do that is by earning co-sponsors. The way we do that is by earning statements of support for groups outside of Congress. And so within Congress, that's why we are valuing every Democrat who signs on as a co-sponsor, and certainly every Republican. And that's why I want to talk a little bit about who are the statements of support that we have gotten, you have gotten, for the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Now, I use this term statement of support and not endorsement. What's the difference? A statement of support allows for more nuance. So they would say that this is a good thing, but these are some things we'd like to see looked at more closely, or we'd like to see change. Whereas an endorsement is sign and seal, deliver. We want to see you pass this bill as written. So that's the distinction. And I want to highlight that what I'm going over here is I'm just talking about statements of support. But to a member of Congress, just the fact that it's positive, whether it's a statement of support or an endorsement, it's all the same. So in the faith category, we're very excited to have statements of support from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, from the Presbyterian Church of the United States, from the Unitarian Universalist Association, the 32nd General Synod of the United Church of Christ, the Evangelical Environmental Network, and Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. We're excited to see from the Conservation and Big Green camp, Trout Unlimited, Protect Our Winters, National Wildlife Federation, the National Resources and Defense Council, the Environmental Defense Fund, the Nature Conservancy, and the Ocean Conservancy having written statements of support. On the conservative side, Republican, the Alliance for Market Solutions, Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, they've all written statements of support. And in business groups, Ceres, C2ES, the Silicon Valley Leadership Group, they've all written statements of support. And we do also have a lot of endorsements. Thanks to your hard work, 46 local governments have endorsed this policy. And we also have 130 plus brewers around the country who have also endorsed this bill. Also important, worth mentioning, groups that have backed a carbon price more generally, not necessarily this bill, include the Episcopal Church and the U.S. Conference of Mayors. We're excited about each and every single one of those statements of support. And thank you to all of you for the work that you did in that, making that happen. Now, those other bills that dropped. First of all, I want to provide a little bit of context. So, first of all, why were there four carbon pricing bills that were introduced, including two new bipartisan carbon pricing bills? And I also want to note before I answer that question, that three of the four bills that were introduced include original co-sponsors on our bill, specifically Senator Cooney, Representative Runes, and Representative Lipinski. So why Thursday? Well, Thursday was the last official day of this congressional session before the August recess started. And it turns out that people in Congress love a deadline. And so they were just working to that deadline. I'm sure the procrastination didn't play any role in their preparations at all. And so why are they all doing this? Why is it that the original co-sponsors on our bill are introducing other bills? Are they jumping ship? No, they're not jumping ship. And to help explain this, I want to share something I just heard from my sister-in-law. She is in the film industry. She's trying to become a freelance writer, a script writer. And she was speaking with an executive there at a company you would recognize recently. And they gave her an idea. If you're a freelancer and you're trying to pitch a script, you're trying to get hired, don't go into an interview and pitch just one script. Pitch 10. And maybe they'll like three. So assume there's going to be a fail rate. And so what is going on here, what Representatives Rooney and Lipinski and Senator Coons are doing, is they're pitching scripts to the American people and they're seeing what they bite on. And this is in fact reflected in some of their quotes. They're pitching this to the American people. And of course, we like our script the best. We spend a lot of time writing that script. We put a lot of time and thought into that. And that's the one we are going to continue to hype so that we can earn that inside track. But we do want to welcome these other bills. They create a sense of momentum and feasibility around the economist-favored idea of carbon pricing. And I think it's more likely that something gets picked. There's also a chance, they also give Republican members of Congress in particular more choices. We really want to get Representative Rooney some cover. This might help him do that. And when I ask myself, is it easier or is it harder to get a Republican on our bill if they're already on one of these bills? The answer that I come to for myself is that it's easier if they're already on one of these bills than if they're not on any of these bills. So I think we're greasing the skids here. Additionally, I know a lot of you have been struggling with the question of, is our bill bipartisan? And according to the dictionary, yes, there are members of both parties on this bill. But according to how it feels, there's room for improvement. And so getting more Republicans on carbon pricing bills, even if it's not specifically on our bill, helps with this feeling that this is an idea that both parties support. So there's a lot of good reasons to be excited about these bills. And that our champs are pitching these bills to the public showing up in the media. So this is the quote I was looking for. This is from E&E News. Bruni and Coons have endorsed various other carbon pricing proposals in the past, but our two new bills underscore the strategy for carbon pricing backers to put as many proposals on the table as possible and see where Republicans will bite. So it appeared that they had already absorbed this piece of advice that film executives are giving to young up-and-comers. And in fact, you know, we're not surprised that Representative Bruni in particular is doing this. He's been saying since December that he wants to see three carbon pricing bills out there to get the conversation going. And that's what we're seeing right now. So he's just sticking to his word. There was also a good amount of media about this. So I mentioned that E&E News piece. There were several other pieces. The coverage was very positive for CCL. And I just want to give a shout out, kudos to our communications team, Steve Vault and Flannery Winchester. They did really solid work in working with reporters and making sure that our message got out there. CCL came off very well in the press. And part of that was we had this great quote from Senator Coons at his press conference. Speaking about climate change policy, he said, quote, "But the ways in which organizations like the Citizens Climate Lobby and others are engaging on this is beginning to make a difference." So there you go. There you have it. Senator says that you are making a difference. And I think that you really should take a lot of credit for this. The reason that these bills are being introduced, the reason that their ambition is the way that it is because of you. And if you don't believe me, take Senator Coons' word for it. Now, I also know that a lot of you have struggled with your left flank in your districts. And you may have heard that Senator Coons' bill doesn't include a regulatory pause. And you may feel like he's abandoning you and making your lives harder. But again, there's this quote in the news from Senator Coons. Coons said this, "Coons acknowledged that the Clean Air Act likely would have to be on the table if he wants Republicans to jump on board. Quote, I recognize that some sort of consideration of a temporary suspension or a conditional suspension is part of the conversation with Republicans," he said. "But this is a bill that is my ideal bill. And in order to get a bipartisan bill, there's a number of things that might have to change." So if that's a point where you do feel like you've been getting pressure and you continue to get pressure and they bring up Coons' bill, you can bring up that quote from Senator Coons himself to say, no, this is part of politics. He's being smart and we are too. Now, let's get into those other bills, the details of this. And I just want to note before you start scribbling away furiously that all that I'm going to share with you is already up on CCL Community. You go on to CCL Community and you search carbon pricing bills in Congress, and I'm sure it'll appear in the chat momentarily, you'll find this. And you'll find a brief description available there. Again, the search term is carbon pricing bills in Congress. And I want to thank Adeline DeYoung in the DC office and Brett Cease, Adeline, for researching the bills and making sure that what we get up there is accurate, and Brett for making sure that it gets up on CCL Community in a timely fashion. Let's start in the Senate. The Climate Action Rebate Act of 2019 was introduced by Senator Coons along with Senator Dianne Feinstein. This has a House companion bill with identical text, which was introduced by Representative Jimmy Panetta and Representative Tom Suozzi. Both are Democrat-only bills. When Senator Coons finds a Republican, the bill that they introduced together will be titled the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act of 2019. Have you perhaps heard that name somewhere? So it is very clear that when Representative Coons finds a Republican, that's when he will introduce that, the Senate companion bill to the existing House bill, H.R. 763. So you can take that to the bank. Now, but in this ideal bill of Senator Coons, the price, this initial price is $15 per ton of CO2 equivalent and increases by at least $15 per ton. Like our bill, it also lays out a schedule for emissions reductions, and if it doesn't meet that target, increases by $30 instead of by $15. For the revenue, 70% of the revenue goes to means-tested dividends, 20% goes to infrastructure, 5% goes to research and development, and 5% goes to transition assistance. There is no regulatory pause, as I mentioned, and there is a border adjustment. As I mentioned, the House companion bill introduced by Representative Panetta is exactly the same. So all those details are the same. Moving on to the two bipartisan bills, the bill on which Rooney is the lead and Lipinski is the co-sponsor, called the Stemming, Warming, and Augmenting Pay Act of 2019, or the SWAP Act. So with the SWAP Act, the price point begins at $30 and increases by 5% per year above inflation with a conditional $2 additional increase. That's a serious price. That's a serious rate of increase. The revenue use goes to reducing payroll taxes on both the employer and the employee side. 25% of the revenue would go to the general fund, 52.5% goes to reduce payroll taxes, 7.5% goes to Social Security, 7.5% goes to state block grants for low-income households, and 7.5% goes to climate adaptation, carbon sequestration, energy efficiency, and advanced R&D programs. There's a regulatory pause, very similar to the one in HR 763, and there's a border adjustment. The next bipartisan bill, with Representative Lipinski as the lead and Representative Rooney as the co-sponsor, is the Raise Wages, Cut Carbon Act. This begins at $40 and increases at 2.5% per year plus inflation. 84% of the revenue goes towards reducing payroll taxes. 5% goes to the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP. 1% goes to the Weatherization Assistance Program, and 10% goes to Social Security beneficiaries. There's a border adjustment, and there's also a regulatory pause. So those are the bills, and again, you can find that on CCL Community. Just search carbon pricing bills. Now, what to keep in mind during the August recess? We're at this is the second day of the August recess. First of all, the first thing to keep in mind is that what happened on Thursday, seeing this slew of carbon pricing bills with serious prices, all of which have some consideration for low-income households, this would not be possible without you. You are driving the conversation in Capitol Hill. You are driving the climate conversation in this country, and you are driving it closer to what needs to happen, closer to what economists say is the most efficient way to reduce emissions fast. So that's the first thing you should know. You're doing great. What happened on Thursday is also good for the national discussion. CCL exists to create the political will for a livable world, not to create the political will for our specific policy. In the livable world column, we saw four bills with serious carbon prices, which made some effort to make low-income households whole. That's a really, really good thing, and we're very excited about that. But we still have a favorite. We still like our script the best, and I want to be clear, none of these other bills are going to be supporting acts. Our only ask is going to be to co-sponsor the Energy Innovation and Carbon. That being said, please remember, to shoot at these bills would be to shoot at our own champions. The champions, the leads on these bills, are also original co-sponsors of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. We're not going to do that. We're not going to shoot ourselves in the foot. So how do we handle ourselves? From this day forward, whenever any of these bills come up in social media, in a letter to the editor, at a tabling event, or whether it's in a meeting with a member of Congress, if you talk about one of these bills, I'm saying you must also talk about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, HR 763. Say why you support our bill. So here's an example of how you might do that. Let's say that somebody brings up the SWAP Act. What you could say is, this bill is an important contribution to building the national conversation around bipartisan solutions to climate change. The leads on this bill are also co-sponsors on the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. That's my favorite because, and there you can go into your favorite reasons for supporting the Energy Innovation Carbon Dividend Act. So that's important. Remember, if any of these bills come up, no statement is complete without also mentioning the Energy Innovation Carbon Dividend Act. And the way you can do that is by saying, these bills are important contributions to the building the national conversation around bipartisan solutions to climate change. The leads on these bills are also co-sponsors of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. That's my favorite because. So let me give you some ideas for what to fill in after that because. This is our favorite because of these bipartisan bills. It is clearest that we're honoring the two red lines that I laid out in the June conference. This bill gets to a higher price, which means greater emissions reduction sooner. And it's clearest that HR 763 takes care of the poor and middle class. And it's as simple as that. Remember, the backers of these bills are also backers on our bills. And so by having a favorite that they already support, you're not doing them any damage. You're not doing them any insult. You're just expressing your preference. One of our research coordinators, Rick Knight, he has been working furiously and getting this together, and he actually plotted out these rates. And so the rates for these bills are plotted right there. The dark blue line that you see at the top, that's for the Climate Action Rebate Act. That's Senator Coons's ideal bill. The one below that is our bill, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. And then the red line is for the SWAP Act. And then the orange line is for the raise wages cut carbon bill. You know, we feel good about that first red line. So that's a visual on how these prices compare. So to summarize, we have a much richer national dialogue going on right now, a much richer bipartisan dialogue moving forward. And you help create that. We are going to nurture that dialogue. We are going to nurture that dialogue by saying only positive things about all of these bills. We're going to be clear about what our favorite is. We're going to do that by making sure whenever we talk about any of these, we're going to mention the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. We're also going to make sure that we're positive and clear about why we support these. We're going to know that at this moment, this level of ambition would not have been possible without us. Even Senator Coons says so. So we're going to take that. We're going to let that thought warm us as we go forward into the August recess. And I think the things are looking good.
So now I'm going to turn the call over to Madeline Parra to talk about taking action.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie. Can you guys believe how much things have changed from just a year ago? Climate change is a campaign issue now, and it's in the media much more. Public concern is rising and denial is decreasing. The discussion of how to solve it has accelerated, and these new bills are evidence of that. Despite all the commentary by political pundits about how hopeless it is to try to pass a carbon tax, members of Congress aren't buying into that point of view and are continuing to push forward proposals to do just exactly that, put a strong price on carbon pollution. I totally agree with Danny that this is a good development, that it'll help our own work on HR 763, and that we can be of good cheer as we continue building support for the Energy Innovation Act. None of these other bills has what HR 763 has, which is 59 co-sponsors and all of you promoting it. So my job now is to talk about our action response to these recent developments. So here's the short version. Stay focused on HR 763. Stay positive about the other bills and appreciate any of your members of Congress that support them. So Danny talked at the national conference, if you were able to hear him there, about the tsunami and the long slog. We're focused on building support for HR 73 for that long slog, and so we're ready for the possibility that political conditions this year or next could lead to the bill being introduced in the Senate and moving to a vote. That's a tsunami. Juggling the tactics, the timing, and the coalition building for that is the job of our DC staff. Our job as volunteers across the country is to build political will, deepen relationships, and keep bringing new supporting voices to your congresspeople. However far we get this year and next, the support we build now will also help in that long slog to advance this legislation after the election. It'll let us enter 2021 from a position of strength should we be forced by our country's politics to wait until then? So let me remind you of what we've identified as the most important things for building support for HR 763. So right at the top is demonstrate ongoing support from both the grassroots via constituents and from the grass tops via community leaders, businesses, and organizations. At the grassroots level, that looks like organizing constituents to call, email, or fill out constituent comment forms regularly, so that there's a steady drumbeat of constituents calling for bipartisan action via HR 763. At the grass tops level, determine which community influencers are most likely to be listened to by your particular members of Congress, and find ways to bring those voices to the attention of your congresspeople and their staff. Keep working on finding new voices to bring to them. And then, as often as possible, we want you to name your member of Congress in letters to the editor. So praise them whenever they do something right that really gets their attention, and remind people to contact them in your letters to the editor. As part of bringing new voices to Congress, continue your work on diversifying your group, especially in regard to age, ethnicity, and political affiliation. So given that we have this need to increase Republican support and sponsorship for the bill, the poll by Republican strategist Frank Luntz's former firm is of particular interest. It showed that Republicans under the age of 40 support the approach of carbon fee and dividend at almost the same level as Democrats, an incredible 75% of Republicans under the age of 40. That means there's a lot of Republicans in their 20s and 30s who don't have much of a voice in the politics of climate change. And we should be looking for them, and talking with them one-on-one, and finding ways to build support for them to empower each other and add their voices to this politics of climate change. So we'll hear from one of them on a video at the end of this call. And Jim Tolbert, our Conservative Outreach Director, is going to be rolling out some new programs to help us all do just exactly that in the next few months. So stay tuned. All right, so what about those senators? We need to work as a state to bring them on board. So everything I've just said now, and Danny said, applies especially to your senators. And that's going to mean collaboration among the chapters in your state so that you have a focused plan. We don't want to move the House bill forward without the Senate having a bill introduced, so we have some work to do. All right, let's address those new carbon pricing bills then. What should you be doing? I'm just basically going to repeat what Danny said. First of all, he said, we want to stay supportive of our Energy Innovation Act champions who sponsored these new bills. One of the things you can do that way is to follow and share our social media on these bills. And this week is a good time to do that if you haven't already. You can also use them as examples of the growing bipartisanship and of carbon pricing support in your media and outreach work. And then, as Danny said, pivot to why you're most excited about the Energy Innovation Act. And I think you can find ways to do that without comparing them. For liaisons and lobby teams, if your member of Congress is interested in one of the bills, be positive and point out relevant examples of members of Congress who support multiple carbon pricing bills. If your member of Congress supports one of them, thank him or her. It doesn't stop them from sponsoring HR 763 also. In fact, it might even make it easier. Some of you may be having in-district meetings during the recess, and of course, we'll also have more lobby meetings during our November Lobby Day this fall. So that's it. Stay focused on the Energy Innovation Act and stay positive about the other bills. All right, so as I was starting to say before, last Thursday was a really busy day in Congress. Not only were there all these new carbon pricing bills getting introduced, but the Senate Democratic Special Committee on the Climate Crisis held a hearing in which they invited three Republicans who are working to change their party's position on climate change. And I just want to give them a shout out for that bipartisanship. That is exactly what we like to see. Those three folks were Frank Luntz, whose former firm did the poll that I cited earlier, Kiera O'Brien, who's a Harvard student and member of Students for Carbon Dividends, and Nick Huey, a CCL volunteer from Utah, who did some extraordinary campus work. And we're going to play Nick's 6-minute testimony to end our call tonight. So go ahead with that, Ricky.
My name is Nick Huey. I'm a father of two, an advertiser, a Republican, and a Mormon Christian. I'm not your typical climate change activist either. The closest I've ever been to vegetarian is swapping a beef sandwich for a chicken one, and that was hard. It's not that I hate the planet. I just don't know why I'd bring a squirt gun to a forest fire. I'd rather call the fire department. That is why I'm here. We may be from different parties, but we're from the same planet. So thank you for your time, fellow Earthians. When I went to BYU, I had a baby. Then I had another baby. It's kind of a Mormon hobby. But with each new child I held in my arms, my concern for their future grew. I wanted to protect my children, and there was no way I could do that. It had to be a planetary effort. So I started trying to figure out how to bridge the gap between the far left and the far right so we could all work together on climate change. The answer I found was not a new policy. It was a new idea. I called it the far middle, a radical place where the left and right respect and learn from each other's viewpoints publicly. In 2017, I wanted to prove the far middle could exist. They call the rivalry between BYU and the Utes the Holy War. Like the far left and far right, we hate each other. What if we could use our bitter rivalry to show Democrats and Republicans how to get along when it comes to climate? On the first week of fall classes, BYU students arrived at the U with over 3,000 purple flowers to place on each of their car windshields. Why purple? Because the Utes school color is red and ours is blue. Purple is right in the middle. With each flower, we left a video inviting Utes to team up with us on climate. A simple, easy execution with unexpected results. The day of the event, the emails from students began pouring in. We were broadcast on Utah's biggest news channels, garnering over 200,000 media impressions on our first day of operations. But we weren't done. 1 week later, 50 volunteers hiked the side of a mountain to shine a purple Y the size of a football field inside BYU Stadium during the nationally aired rivalry football game. At this point, sustainability coordinators from other universities began to reach out. We were featured in local talk shows and radio interviews. We got ultra-conservative Utah to start buzzing about climate change on every news channel. Why? Because we approached the problem from the far middle. The radical part of this campaign wasn't that we were angry and yelling. It was that we weren't. Climate change is not the sickness. It's a symptom. Excuse me. It's a physical manifestation. It's a physical manifestation of America's deeper infirmity. Polarized partisan pride. I've heard both of my colleagues here talk about it. The problem isn't a lack of bipartisan options. It's a lack of bipartisanship itself. If we can strip away partisan pride and greed, the symptoms will go away faster than any of us could reasonably believe possible. The far middle is a place of humility, reason, and respect. It's the same kind of humility that inspires a group of Democratic senators to invite three young Republicans to come offer their perspective on the climate crisis. In the far middle, a liberal atheist and a conservative Mormon Christian can sit down and have a real conversation about climate, healthcare, guns and gays, and leave with new ideas. In the far middle, we treasure diversity of thought every bit as we treasure diversity of skin color, even if those thoughts are in direct conflict with our own. I was asked to come here today to share the way forward, not right, not left, forward. The answer is to become radical far middleists. A collection of those who maintain one party affiliation while publicly embracing the other. Create a space where it's safe to concede, to work together, to respect, and you will resonate with your constituents and the rest of America on a level you didn't know possible. So, and I apologize, the tears have made this last a little bit longer.
Take your time.
Okay.
You're doing great.
Thanks. So what can you do to create this far middle space when the far left and the far right dominate the headlines? The answer lies in big, safe, smart public gestures that in today's political climate are much more disruptive than another angry tweet. If there's one ad tip I can give you, it's when everyone zigs, you zag. Could you imagine the headlines today if instead of passing a resolution to condemn someone's rhetoric, you introduced a resolution to apologize for your own? It's a gesture of goodwill. Or if a Republican and Democrat went to rally in each other's respective districts because they saw in each other integrity and humanity. What would such simple, radical actions do to the dialogue in this country? If you want to move the needle, you need to be radically agreeable. You need to be as radically agreeable as the far left and far right are radically disagreeable. I offer my services to as an advertiser to anyone in this room free of charge, regardless of party, as long as you'll use them to heal the gap that has turned our climate into a political weapon. You each have unique opportunities to bring the far middle back into mainstream America. I would love to figure out what those are. If a handful of students from conservative Utah can get every single news channel with it, can get on every single news channel with a message about climate change, there's no reason a handful of senators from our nation's highest level of government can't do the same on a national scale. I imagine you all would like to see more of your Republican colleagues here. I would too. But for that to happen, someone has to publicly let go of pride in a big way. Someone has to soften. It's no longer enough to reach across the aisle in private conversations. Now is the time for radical collaboration, to let love outweigh fear. The American public will not only permit such leadership, we'll break out the fireworks. The far middle has been muted by two warring parties, but we are still America's majority. Give us our voice back. Create the far middle, and climate change will take care of itself. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah. So, in case you're wondering, CCL staff is already working with Nick on a social media campaign called Welcome to the Far Middle. That's it for tonight. You have a good rest of your day. Thanks for being here tonight, and we'll have fun out there together. Thanks, you guys.
I'm thinking around Dave. What do you?
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.